So we conclude with Psalm 80. This psalm was composed at a time of military disaster in the Northern Kingdom. A disaster interpreted as a sign of God's punishment. We're used to that, I think. And the anger of God will again become a theme, which I've talked about a few times with you. The occasion may have been the collapse of Samaria, the capital of the Northern Kingdom, in 721 BC. That's a likely origin for whoever first composed the psalm. There are echoes also of the Philistine victories over Saul. So there may be quite ancient bits in it that have been reinterpreted and reshaped in the light of changing history. It's a hymn book, so it doesn't stay the same. We've just got the final version fixed forever now. Note the mention of the ark in verse 1 and God's right hand in verse 17. Saul was of the tribe of Benjamin, the first king, and Benjamin means right hand, son of my right hand. And when they worked out their directions, they faced east. And if you imagine a map and they're facing east, well, the right hand is south. That's right, that down there. And so Benjamin is the southernmost tribe of Israel. And then there's Judah. And Judah and Israel were never really together except for a very brief period under David and Solomon. So that's the exception. Don't think of it as the norm. The norm is that Israel is from Benjamin, from Jerusalem, all the way north. And then you've got the hill country of Judah and the tribe and the kind of desert areas. It's just that Judah was where Jerusalem was, and that was its importance. So Benjamin is the most southern tribe of Israel. Brackets, as long as you don't include Judah. The psalmist is pleading with God to turn back to his people in love. Verse 18, we will never turn back from you. They're in a mess. God, if you turn round and face us again, we promise we'll never look away ever again. And please God, many didn't. The first key image is the shepherd. God is called the Shepherd of Israel. It's the only time that actual title is used for God in the Psalms. And we think as a Christian, of course, that becomes a beautiful image for Jesus too. John chapter 10, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for his sheep. You might like to think of that as you pray this psalm. Or Luke, that psalm, that parable of Jesus, which one of you having 100 sheep and losing one of them does not leave the 99 in the wilderness and go after the one that is lost till he finds it? And don't think that the shepherd is abandoning 99 to go. It means he leaves the 99 in charge of the kid because they're all mad, they're quite happy. So he says, look after them. They're being looked after, obviously. He's not going to lose at 99 to get one. But then the shepherd is the main one. Spends his time searching out for the little lonely one that's been hurt while the others are being cared for and easily kept together. 1 Peter verse 2, chapter 2, verse 25 says, you were going astray like sheep, but now you've returned to the shepherd and guardian of your souls, Jesus, the revelation of God. So that's one image. The second image is that of the vine. And again we think of Jesus, who has a parable in chapter 12 of Mark there. He will come and give the vineyard to others. If the people don't produce fruit, well, someone will have to. And as Mark's writing that in Rome probably, where the bulk of the Christians were Jews, but a lot weren't, and where the church had already spread to the Gentile worlds more successfully than it had among the Jews who didn't want to budge, he's saying if you don't produce the fruit, the vineyard will go to others. So Jewish Christians, get your brothers and sisters to come in. Get Jews to come into the Christian community because this is the fulfillment of everything for them. Mark tried, Paul tried, Barnabas tried. But it's hard to do that, and most, because of their leaders, didn't know any better and didn't come in. So Judaism continued, but without the fulfillment of Jesus, enlightening and comforting and all of that. And John chapter 15 verse 1, I am the true vine, my Father is the vine grower, etc. So let's get to the psalm. Psalm verse 1, listen, O shepherd of Israel, you who lead Joseph, you're right, Ephraim and Manasseh, Samaria, northern kingdom, you who lead Joseph like a flock, you who are enthroned upon the cherubim, you're back to the image of the kippur and the cherub there and a cherub there facing each other, and God is, there's nothing there, and God is enthroned here in this sacred place, invisibly of course. You who are enthroned upon the cherubim, shine forth before Ephraim and Benjamin and Manasseh. That's the whole of Samaria. Stir up your might, come and save us. And the refrain, for some psalms have a constant refrain, restore us, O God. Let your face shine forth and we will be saved. Like the sun coming out from behind the clouds. Let us see your face. Didn't we have that? Oh, if you went to Mass today, you're on the feast of St. Philip and James today. Philip says to, let us see the face of God, and then we'll be happy. And Jesus says, Philip, have I been with you so long, and you haven't yet realized that if you see me, you're seeing the Father? In other words, Jesus is the icon of God, the face of God, the human expression of God. So what you see in Jesus is the human icon, is probably the best word, symbol might be a good word, of God. Let your face shine forth and we will be saved. Verse 4, Yahweh God of hosts, how long will you be angry while your people plead with you? So it's the northern kingdom we're obviously in because of Manasseh, Ephraim and Benjamin. So that's where we've got to locate the psalm, not like the last one, which was in Judah. This is up in the northern kingdom. Well, we're pleading with you, so are you going to be angry forever or what? Here's Isaiah chapter 1, verse 15. When you stretch out your hand, says Isaiah, to the Judah now, to the southern kingdom. He lived at the time of the destruction of the northern kingdom, all through it. So he's seeing it all happen up there and talking to his contemporaries. When you stretch out your hands, I will hide my eyes from you, says God. Even though you make many prayers, I will not listen. Why? Because your hands are full of blood. Wash yourselves, make yourselves clean, remove the evil of your doings from before my eyes. Cease to do evil, learn to do good, seek justice, rescue the oppressed, defend the orphan, and plead for the widow. And I will live according to the covenant, and my face will shine upon you. But don't expect to be able to receive my love if you're not open to it, if your behavior is contrary to it. And we know that's not because God's going to withhold it. It's because we've pulled the blinds and we can't see the sun. Verse 5, you have fed them with tears for their bread, tears to eat. You've given them tears to drink in full measure. You make us the scorn of our neighbors, and our enemies laugh among themselves. And then the psalm response again, restore us, O God of hosts, added in now. Hosts meaning the God of the heavens, the God of all the stars, the God of these living creatures, these angels, hosts, stars, they're all a bit confused about all that. Are the angels the same as the stars? Or are, you know, I don't think they ever asked the question, but when they say hosts, they mean the angels, but they also mean the stars. God of hosts, God of the heavens, God of this army. Let your face shine forth and we will be saved. And another memory, verse 8, you brought a vine out of Egypt. You drove out the nations and you planted it. You cleared the ground for it. It took deep root and filled the land. The mountains were covered with its shade, the mighty cedars with its branches. It sent out its branches to the sea, the Mediterranean, and its shoots to the great river, the Euphrates. And if you're in Ireland today, you might be a beautiful Irish mother today, going to Mass and finding the church half closed and remembering what it was like when she was young, you could weep the same weeping. Look at Ireland, St. Patrick, and what the Catholic Church in Ireland has done in America and Australia for a start, and in a whole lot of other places, and all the wonderful religious and priests and missionaries and all that stuff. If you were Dutch from or Netherlands, and you thought of the wonderful missionary endeavor of Holland, of the Dutch in the 1900s, extraordinary stuff. All in our own MSC province, I mean, Missionaries of the Sacred Heart Order, the Philippine Islands, founded by the Dutch, it's now a big province. Indonesia is by far our biggest province now. Australia's the second. We used to be the biggest, but Indonesia's grown like, I think Dutch started all that off. They did stuff in Brazil, in South America. And now we look at the Dutch province and it's aging extraordinary. No vocations for 30 years. But they reckon the old missionaries that are there are just the most lovely old people in the world. They're just absolutely charming, wonderful, faith-filled people. But nothing happening, you get? No children, no sons. And you look at all the religious orders of the world, nuns particularly, you know, with very few vocations coming in. That'd be hard, wouldn't it? So it's the same prayer, like the whole thing that was so wonderful seems to be falling apart and we're not sure why, and there's 100 reasons why. And some people say the answer to all is to become stricter, and you say, oh, go away. I mean, go away. Like, you know, that's not, the answer is to be alive and just because the world has suddenly blown apart and expanded everywhere, you can't go back and pretend we haven't got the World Wide Web or we haven't had the Vietnam War, can you? You can't go back and think that we're still locked in a little island where Grandma never moved from here 10 yards down the road. And it was beautiful, the faith they had. Lovely stuff, wonderful stuff in that world. But it won't survive in today's world. So you can't ask your grandkids to share that faith. They can share the faith, but in a different way, with different words and different awarenesses. And we have to be in our own real world. And we have to share our faith with our kids. But as Tolkien says in The Lord of the Rings, something like this, if I remember it, we cannot control the weather of the future, but we can give our children good soil to till. That's pretty good. So he's crying about all this beautiful stuff they had, but they've lost. Verse 12, why have you broken down its walls? And if Jesus had been there when this person had wrote the psalm, he would have said, oh, look, darling, God didn't break down the walls. Nebuchadnezzar did. Sargon II did. Sennacherib did. Stop blaming God. But Jesus wasn't there, so no one was there to tell the psalmist to relax a bit and stop thinking God's doing all the dirty work. Because you've really got a choice. You either think God controls the world. If you do, you'll have to end up an atheist if you've got any brains. I mean, honestly, you just got to go that way and don't muck around. Or you'll think that God loves the world. And if you think God loves the world and then think of all the people who've loved you and all the times you've loved and hurt because you love, you'll realize that love does not include control. Love respects the freedom. I mean, I'm not talking about children, am I, and protection. I'm talking about controlling another person. And if a church tries to control, give it away, leave it, chuck it in, it's hopeless, it's heretical. If I try to control you as a priest, well, I'm the heretic, not the church, because I'm going against church, you know what I mean? Select what you're going against. But if a whole community is into control, walk away, fly away. If people go around building cages for you, just go and fly off something. You know, we're not into caging people. All people may take refuge in. Why have you broken down its walls so that all who pass along the way pluck its fruit? Good image. The boar from the forest ravages it. And all that move in the field, that is the undomesticated animals, lions and whatever else, jackals, feed on it. And you find similar language, someone's borrowed from somebody, or the imagery is common. Isaiah 5 verse 4, what more was there to do for my vineyard, says God, that I haven't done for it? I expected it to yield grapes, why did it yield wild grapes? Yeah, bitter. Now I will tell you what I will do to my vineyard. I will remove its hedge, it shall be devoured. I will break down its wall, it shall be trampled down. The prophet Isaiah using very similar images as a threat to the people. For heaven's sake, get your act together. Jeremiah, similarly, I've planted you as a choice vine from the purest stock. How did you turn degenerate and become a wild vine? And the plea of the psalmist, turn again, O God of hosts. Obviously, God's turned his back on them, not favouring them. So turn around, let's see your face, let's see your love, let's see your smile. Turn again, O God of hosts, look down from heaven and see. Have regard for this vine, the stock that your right hand planted. They've burned it with fire, they've cut it down. May they perish at the rebuke of your countenance. But let your hand be upon the one at your right hand, the one whom you've made strong for yourself. Then we will never turn back from you. Give us life, and we will call upon your name. And the conclusion of the psalm is the refrain, restore us, Yahweh, God of hosts. Let your face shine forth, and we will be saved. And the word Yahweh has been introduced into the... See, there has been... It was, first of all, restore us God, then restore us God of hosts, and now restore us Yahweh, God of hosts. Yahweh always means the God of the Exodus, the God of redemption, the liberating God, God of Moses. God's face shines on us through the eyes of Jesus. And I repeat this morning's gospel, whoever has seen me, said Jesus, has seen the Father. So we've got this image. You cannot make images of God. We can't make images of God, but God made an image of God. Namely, all of us, of course, in some aspect, but Jesus, the Word, the image, the icon, the symbol of God. Whoever has seen me has seen the Father. He is the reflection, says the letter of Hebrews. It's really a preaching oration, it's not a letter, though it was sent in an envelope as a letter, but it's actually a preaching document. He is the reflection of God's glory. Lovely way to speak of Jesus. Perfect way, really. The Greek theological documents, dogmas of the church that are forged in the 4th, 5th centuries are important historically, totally unable to be understood if you don't understand the history. But they lack the freshness of the New Testament images that leave us vague a bit, but take us into the feeling of our faith like that. The reflection of God's glory. How do you speak better of Jesus than that? While Jesus was praying, says Luke, the appearance of his face changed, his clothes became dazzling white. And 2 Corinthians, maybe my favourite text, I used it on my ordination card 44 years ago. So it was a favourite of mine in my early 20s, and it remains such. And what a lovely statement of the 2 Corinthians 4:6. It is God who said, let light shine out of darkness, who has shone in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. So, there's a darkness in all of us, but God has shone in our hearts. And the shining, the radiance, is the light of the knowledge of the glory of God. Where? On the face of Jesus, or you could say in the heart of Jesus, in the person of Jesus. Of the lips.